This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I just finished up at the church, helping get the sound system put together so that we're good to go on Sunday.
Work.
And, oh, hold up.
First.
Boink. I'm actually driving home, and I don't have to rush because we're closed up for the summer on our small groups. We'll probably be getting together once a month just to go out and get a meal or something like that. But I think we're going to have a little break over vacation and then start back up in the fall. So we're good. All is well. Been a good week at work. We've just been hammering away, trying to get the last final things done for the next phases of this registration website we've been working on, but that all seems to be going fine. Not encountering anything too difficult, getting that under control. Worked on a few other little side things there this week as well, little projects that have come up and little oddities in terms of data and doing some research as to why certain legacy code is the way that it is, which is always interesting, trying to figure out why we did certain things the way we did them. But that's just fine. The writing is going fine. I'm a few words behind because I just kind of bailed out last night. We had a few things to take care of and got started a little later in terms of writing. It's not bad. A couple of hundred, 300, 400, somewhere in there. I should be able to get close to making up some of that tonight, and then I'll just make up the rest tomorrow. We really had a lovely weekend. It was just a lovely, lovely weekend last weekend. The Turners, which is my wife's mother's sister's family, came up. So it's my wife's aunt, her kids, who of course are all grown, and their spouses, the ones that had spouses, all came up and brought Annette, who everyone knows as Aunt Net, brought her up so that she could see her sister, my mother-in-law, because both of them are in the struggles of life at this point, and who knows how much more time everyone has. And so they came up. We're all good friends, so that's fine. We went on some walks, we did some talking. They were basically in Friday afternoon and then left early Saturday afternoon, but you know, we had a chance to get together, have a meal together, actually two meals together, and sit around and chit-chat, and it was good. It was just lovely. It was lovely. So it was all good. So that was last weekend. Writing is going fine. I mentioned that. Costumes that I'm working on now, I think I've got World Parrot Day squared away, so we're ready to go on that. And now I'm doing the preliminary work on Marvin the Martian. I'm trying to figure out proportions, because when I do a costume that's based on something that already exists, I like to get close to the proportions. Marvin the Martian is an interesting one in terms of proportions. Marvin is very thin, but he has a very big head. So, there's one non-canonical picture that was done as part of a Saturday Night Live skit, I think, where Marvin the Martian is actually standing in as part of a lineup. And that has him at about 2.5 feet tall, not counting his helmet. So helmet overall, that puts him about 3 feet tall. I've rounded that up to 3 feet because that just makes all the math easier. And I've reduced my height by a couple of inches because I'm 7'2", but, or 7'2", 6'2". But I've reduced that to 6, and so I'm doing everything on a double ratio. So what that means is that Marvin the Martian's head, if I do it to scale, would be 2 feet wide. Which seems a little large, but it is to scale. So if I do everything to scale, I will be twice the size of Marvin the Martian, but everything else should be pretty close in terms of scale. So I have found some rubber blow-up dolls that are 2 feet across, and I've ordered those. Those are coming in. I'm going to blow that up and then, you know, kind of position it in front of my head to see what this looks like if I make a 2 foot wide Marvin the Martian head. And then we'll see from there. As I've said before, it'd be lovely if I could get the eyes to actually move in some way. I have a couple of ideas as to how to get that done. But I need to figure out proportions first of all. And then once I figure out proportions, I can kind of figure out the rest of it. There's just all kinds of possibilities. One possibility is to make the head and the inner part of the head, the kind of black globe, make the helmet and that out of foam. Another possibility is to use thicker foam on the helmet, lighter foam on just the regular black ball, but then reinforce it with some plastic struts. And if I did that, I would probably be able to 3D print the plastic struts, but that might mean I need to get a 3D printer. So there's a lot of, but if I'm going to get a 3D printer, then is it better just to make the actual globe that is Marvin the Martian's face and head to make it out of a 3D print? But if I make it out of a 3D print, 2 feet across is too wide. So does that mean I need to find a pattern to make just small pieces that then all snap together to make the globe, and then cover that with foam to make it, you know, look like it doesn't have a bunch of pieces that were put together? So there's lots of question. And then, you know, the other piece of it is, okay, if I'm going to make things move, when I work on making those move, how am I going to do that? And do I need to 3D print parts for that so that I have spheres within spheres and they are all put together on some sort of cog and gear mechanism? Yeah, there's just all kinds of different possibilities. But I have some plastic spheres coming in that are too small, but they will nest inside of each other. And that will allow me to experiment a little bit. Just see how things look and see if that's really how I want to pursue it. So we'll see. We'll see. So that's all going fine. I think after Marvin the Martian, I think that's going to be the one of the last new costumes I'm going to do this year. Although I do have a holiday called Wear Your Pearls that I'm thinking of doing a costume for. It's in December, surprisingly enough, but because of the way the Fridays fall in December, it actually opens up an additional holiday. And I probably this year I'm going to do something in December where I don't have an elf day ahead of Christmas on the weekend before Christmas because of the distance between the weekend and Christmas. But then maybe I'll just go to the store on Christmas Eve and do a little shopping and then say hello to people and go on. So we'll see. Lots of little details to work out. But that's okay. We'll get them worked out. And plans. When I hit Christmas this year, it will be, I'm trying to figure out how many months. It's a year and 2 months right now because it's July of 2025. Don't give yourself more time than necessary. July of 2025, so it's a year and 2 months. So that's 2025. So if I'm at December of 2024, yeah, it's like 7 months. So that'll be interesting. Anyways, so lots of things to think about, lots of things doing there. I am getting my mail. I just need to check down below, see if we got anything down there. Oh, I do have something down there. And that's going to be a stretch. Okay, here we go. Can't quite get to it. Maybe if I do this, maybe I can. Oh, come on. We're so close. We are so close. This is one of those things like Sisyphus, you know, where he's pushing the rock up the hill. Was it Sisyphus that was pushing the rock up the hill? Aha. Got it. I think that's my other globe. Yeah, probably. So anyways, all is well. This was an interesting week in terms of topics for the podcast, because some of the weeks have been a little lean and I've had to kind of look around and try to figure out what to do for a topic. Not this week. Not this week. Because since the last podcast, I think there have been four topics. I believe that's true. Four topics that have come up. I thought I was doing the podcast on one thing earlier this week, and then just within days, it was like, nope, maybe I'll do it on this one. So then I switched topics, and then just 2 days ago, I switched topics again, and then just this morning, I listened to another podcast. And I didn't switch topics again, but it is certainly in queue. So I have topics for podcasts now for a month. Which isn't always the way it is, but that's fine. You know, that's always comforting because I don't have to work that hard looking around for stuff. I'm backing into my garage. One moment. Since we had that little bit of excitement with the couple just driving up to our house and stealing a package off our porch, we did go ahead and sign up for the Amazon Key program, where if you have certain types of garage door openers, you can have Amazon connect to those. One of the garage door opener types that you can have is called MyKey. And I had gotten that many years ago here and had it tied into my garage door so I could open my garage doors with my phone, which occasionally has come in handy. You know, if someone comes to the house and they're a friend and they're needing to, you know, get in for a moment, it's just nice to be able to open the deck or open the door and go on. We do have, you know, the little keypads on our doors as well, so we can't just give them a keypad number, but, you know. So anyway, since I had that already, then I was looking at Amazon Key, because if you have that set up, they will open your garage door. They will put the packages where you want them to put them, and then they'll close the garage door. Which is nice, because then the packages are inside and less chance, not impossible, but less chance someone is going to actually steal your packages. So, which is a very strange thing to be concerned about when you live 8 miles north of town in the woods. But apparently we're not far enough into the woods to keep the searchers out. We'll call them searchers. But anyways, so that's that. It's been interesting because I went out to the end of the garage floor and I put Amazon there in tape, and then I drew a big arrow to a square of tape, rectangle of tape, that I had put on the ground. And we still have some Amazon people who don't get that they're supposed to put the box inside the rectangle. The nice thing about having it inside the rectangle is that when I'm backing into the garage, I don't have to be that careful. You know, I can just back into the garage knowing that the packages are out of the way. But we had one person walk all the way in and put it on the stair, which is fine. We had one person just kind of tuck it in and lay it against something that was just inside the garage door, which is fine, but I have a sign coming in now to say, deliver all packages here, you know, so we'll see if that will clean some of that up. Anyways, topic today, which as I said wasn't going to be the topic, and I had heard Dr. Epstein speak before on this issue, but he's done a ton more research now. And it's very, very interesting that this stuff is still going on. So this was, I think, with Michael Knowles. It was a conversation with Michael Knowles. And Dr. Epstein, he runs a research center where what they do is they go on to people's computers who volunteer to do this. They install trackers on their computers so that as they do Google searches, they can capture the results that are coming back from those Google searches and also from any interactions that the person might have with Google's applications. And they do this so that they can see the recommendations that Google is making to these individuals. And they can compare those to the 14,000 other people that they have signed up to help them with this. And then they can analyze based on what they know of those people having said, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. And they can see how the information differs between what Google is giving or doing with Democrats versus what Google is doing with Republicans. And he had already established that depending on your search criteria, Google would give you different search results. Like, for instance, in 2016, when Donald Trump was running against Hillary Clinton, they would demonstrate that you could go to Google and you could type in Hillary Clinton, and you would get suggestions that would drop down, and all of them were positive. But if you typed in Donald Trump, the suggestions you would get were all negative. And they documented those. You know, that absolutely Google will skew their search results, and they will tailor the search results to you, but at the same time, they will also tailor the search results to how they think you should be thinking. And it's highly politicized and it's highly partisan, and it promotes one type of worldview. When they could just use an algorithm, run the numbers, and just give you, as they kind of claim to, just give you a real straightforward Here's what we found on that topic. They purposely skew the results to lean you towards their ideology. And some people might say, what? No, that's not it. Because I read other studies where that's not true. But Dr. Epstein pointed out that most of those other studies that show that Google's results are unbiased are all done with anonymous computers. So they've got their cookies all turned off. You know, every ping against the Google stuff is a discrete ping because Google can't get cookies on the machine, that sort of thing. And he said, you know, as soon as you have that, then of course you're going to shut off the Google bias because Google doesn't know who you are. Whereas with what he and his crew do, they have developed ways to monitor what's coming back from the Google websites and get it recorded. And then they can take all that data and run statistical analysis on it. So it's all very interesting. In addition to that, what Dr. Epstein does is they run experimentation. So, for instance, they select whatever, 100 people, 200 people. And they bring them in and they give them a choice of which it's impossible. Well, that it's very unlikely that they have an opinion. So, for instance, they might bring in 100 Americans and they might say, who would you vote for in the Australian Prime Minister election race? And highly unusual that you're actually going to find a person who's even aware of these two people or has a preference between these two people. But what they do is they give them a battery of tests ahead of time. And then they just say, well, why don't you just go research on our computers in the lab here and try to come up with a better handle on who you think you would vote for, because you may not know this person at all. So then they turn them loose on the computers that are in the lab, and they don't know that those computers have been programmed to show a bias one way or the other and to provide biased information. And they said it's very, very easy to push undecided people in different ways. They said, in fact, they had seen a 43% change just by what they were doing with search suggestions or what pages come back in the top 10 of the search results. And he said, we were controlling all of that. And people thought they were using a Google browser when, in fact, they were using our browser. And so we could control the output back to the screen. And when we did that and tuned it to whoever it was, then usually that person, because of the insight, maybe because she wanted to go. Okay, sorry. I was up a little late last night. And sorry. I just blanked out there for a little bit. I don't know how long I was out for. Hopefully it wasn't for several minutes. Holy cow, I need more rest. Anyways, so they were showing this stuff. They were showing a 43% shift. And based on all of those things, Dr. Epstein is firmly convinced that Google alone can shift between 6.4 million and 25.5 million votes in a presidential election with no paper trail or indicators that the voters have been manipulated. So, you know, they tell people, okay, go ahead, do searches. And they go do searches on Google, and the people don't even have any idea that they're being manipulated. And they shift their votes 43%. They said sometimes more, 60%, in any direction that they want to. And it's all about people who are undecided that, you know, they just do some searches on Google, and because of the search results, the people change their mind. And they don't realize that Google is tailoring those search results to them, and they don't realize that Google may be targeting to modify how they think about an issue. So that's all very interesting. The other thing that was interesting that he brought up specifically with this interview with Michael Knowles, because he said later, I think he said that this is the first time I'm revealing this, but he said, as far as the 2024 elections are going, their statistics are showing that Google is sending register to vote reminders to Democrats, or who they perceive would be a Democrat, at a rate of 2.5 times higher than Republicans. So Google is clearly biased. I mean, they do 90% of their political donations all go to Democrats. So, So there you go. He did say one of the things, and I had mentioned this in another podcast that was really just fascinating. He said that they were tracking all of this stuff in the 2020 election. And just for the record, he absolutely does believe that Google helped swing the election in favor of Biden. He said, when you look at how Google was influencing undecided voters, there was enough votes there to absolutely mean that Trump would have won the election if it hadn't been for Google influencing undecided voters. So there's that. But one thing that was interesting is they were doing all this research before the election in 2020. They had been contacted by the New York Post, and I think it was the same reporter who had done the work on the Hunter Biden laptop. And she had contacted them, or they had contacted her, and they had supplied her with all the information. She looked it over. She said, this is amazing. And so she wrote this big, long article, and it was going to be on the front page of the New York Post and yada, yada, yada. Mind you, the New York Post did publish the Hunter Biden laptop story. But then, like the day before the election, she called them up. The reporter called them up, and she was just furious. She was just spitting mad. And she said, they've decided to pull the story. Okay, why would the New York Post pull the story? Because they were getting a third of their traffic from Google, and they didn't want to upset Google. And they knew if they did that type of thing, that Google would just dial them down, you know, and leave them out of the top search, 10 search results. So that's kind of what we're dealing with. There were some interesting things, though. After that happened, it was the day before the election, and so they were looking for somehow to get this information out, so they wrote congressmen and senators. And they did get Ted Cruz to respond, so they show them all the data. Ted Cruz takes it upon himself the day after the election to write this, he and a couple other senators, to write these blistering letters to Google about, you know, if they don't stop this, there's going to be a need to put in regulations to review what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You may recall in the 2020 election, there had to be some runoffs in Georgia. What's very, very interesting, according to Dr. Epstein, is that after Ted Cruz sent off those letters, suddenly in Georgia, all the bias disappeared. It just was like they shut off a light switch and all the bias went to zero. which he said, based on the fact this is all algorithms, I assumed that they couldn't just shut it off, that it was sort of baked into the programs now. But what that showed us is they absolutely are in control of the biased, and they are choosing how much biased their stuff is going to be, and they just dial up whatever they want. So there you go. In the process of showing this thing to people, Dr. Epstein had showed it to a bunch of attorney generals. And he said, maybe this was 2018-ish. I don't know. Anyways, one of the attorney generals came out and saw him in the hall when they were taking a break. And he said, basically, gotta tell you, if I was Google, I'd just see that you were killed. So he said, you know, you should watch your back. And he said, you know, I thought that was kind of a weird thing to be told. But, you know, I thought, okay. Well, then they kind of just started tracking things. And he said, one of the interesting things that happened was he has a website called America's Digital Shield, which tracks the online activities of over 14,000 registered voters and notes that the website's numbers and graphs mysteriously disappeared for a while. So, you know, they put up this website to document this stuff, and then just all of a sudden their graphs don't show anymore. And he didn't know who else to call, but he ended up calling his son, and his son tried to get over to the office to find out what was going on, and in the process was sideswiped by a car. I think they said a black SUV was sideswiped, had an accident, you know, could have been fatal, but wasn't. The son called the dad and said, I'm not going to be able to make it into the office because I just got sideswiped in an accident. Well, that was concerning because a couple of years before that, between the time that this attorney general said, I don't know why Google doesn't just kill you, and the time his son was sideswiped, his wife was sideswiped. She was going on a trip, I think he said, to the airport. And a big, long tractor trailer that had two extra trailers trailing behind it, jackknifed and just crushed his wife's car. And she hung on for a couple of days, but then she died. And, of course, there, you can't prove anything. You can't show anything. But, you know, I mean, just weird stuff happens. He is exploring many, many other ways that it's possible to manipulate people through search engine results and through how things are being shown. He does have a kind of really interesting thing that he's suggesting, which I can't say that I'm necessarily opposed to it. So he said one of the things that they could do, in his opinion, to stop this is that the problem is that Google has scraped all of this information from websites, and it wasn't really their information, but they just went ahead and scraped it. So in his way of thinking, they have stolen this information from the websites. But of course the websites are cooperating because if you don't cooperate with Google, no one can find you. But he said Google has this database of how these websites are all interlinked. Well, that's the core of their search. And this guy's opinion is that we could do away with all of this bias and all of this manipulation by having the federal government simply say, you know what, you are establishing a monopoly here. It's obvious that you're skewing results in the favor of one political party over another. You operate under section, you know, whatever it is, 230. And so you're supposedly just supplying a platform, but you're not really supplying a platform. You know, you are moderating content. And on the basis of all that, we can take away your, is it section 230? Section 230 rights, you know, or, and make you liable every time something is posted that leads to some kind of physical harm. Or you can just take your entire catalog of databases and how they're linked to other databases, and we're going to make that part of the commons. He had a name for it. It's not the Creative Commons, but some kind of commons. And he said, if we did that, that's really all it would take. If anybody could avail themselves of Google search information and could simply present the results based on the number of links between websites, that would mean that Google would be out there trying to push biased information, and there would be a dozen other people out there that are just saying, yep, here's the results, you sort it out for yourself. And he felt, and I think he's right, that that would cause all of this bias to go away, because at the end of this day, this bias is a horrible thing. He says, rightly so, that Google believes its mission is to not only to index everything and make it all searchable, but then to use those search influences to influence humanity to become, quote unquote, better, which is influence humanity to believe the way they believe and with their political leanings. So, you know, it's all very, very interesting. It's just very, very interesting to see where all this is going to go. The name of this podcast, it was on YouTube, and it was called Michael and Google's Worst Nightmare, quote, they control your mind, close quote, Dr. Epstein, Epstein. Have a great day. Sorry for falling asleep on you.